The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, friends. We're back again. It's FIFO.com. It's April 20th, 2024, 420. And you know what that means. After your TNA Rebellion post show, right? Because that's what you do. You hop on the internet, you talk about the wrestling. I'm Atrial Pearl. And of course, it's a pay-per-view night for TNA. So Stephen Jensen has to be with me. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hey, good to see you, Joel. It's good to be here. Condolences. I know you've been out recently, but it's good to have you back, man.
Thank you. Yeah, it's my first night back. Not to get, you know, sympathetic or overly done. I appreciate everyone because this is the first public forum I've had a chance to say thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone who's reached out to me, everyone who has said anything to me, or just who maybe you don't know. I lost my dad last Friday, and I'll be perfectly honest, this was something that was a long time coming. He had been sick for a long time. I'm not going to turn this into a whole therapy session and everything, but I will say I appreciate everybody's kind words. I can tell you I'm very happy to be back here with everybody in this community. I appreciate everything everyone's given and has approached and said to me. Thank you. I take that. I appreciate that, including yourself, Stephen Jensen. Thank you so much for everything, and the FIFO team as a whole. It's been fantastic. So nice to come back. Nice to do a little bit of wrestling talk, because I said, you know what? Rebellion's coming. You know what? That's the stars at AEW Dynasty. So who else is going to do the show?
Yes.
So I got you here.
Yes. Well, you know, once again, good to have you back, Joel. On a lighter note, everybody, to let everyone know how I'm doing tonight, I told Joel right before we got rolling tonight, how I'm doing tonight is actually I'm very sticky and wet at the moment. Happy 420 to everybody, by the way. I'm covered in Woo energy drink at the moment. Again, so for anybody who watched... Hey, for anybody who watches the Spotlight on Thursdays right here on this YouTube channel, youtube.com/Fightful, my friend gave me a six-pack of Woo energy drink so we could try it. I tried it on Thursday morning. It exploded all over myself, all over my lap, all over my floor. I was actually out and about today, out in the world, out in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was buying some action figures and buying some trading cards, having a nice little Saturday out, and I decided to open another Woo Energy while I was on my drive before going into a Five Below. For everyone who ever frequents Five Below's, right before I went in there in the parking lot, I opened another Woo Energy drink and it exploded all over my lap, all over my truck. So my car is covered in Woo Energy. Went into the Five Below, bought myself a new T-shirt because it was only $5 with it being Five Below. So bought myself a new T-shirt while I was in there. This is not that T-shirt. This is a GCW shirt. And then I came back for this show. And right before me and Joel got started, I decided, hey, I'm going to go ahead and get an energy drink going because I want to have some energy for this this review. This is my third Woo Energy that I have opened and the third one that has exploded all over me. I don't know if there's a problem with these things. I don't know if anyone else has experienced or dealt with this. I have never dealt with a beverage in my entire life that has given me more problems than Woo Energy. And by the way, it doesn't even taste good. I'm just going to keep it real. It doesn't even taste good. I've been gifted G Fuel by Vinny Pacifico. I have a lot of that stuff. Most of it's pretty good. I'll give you honest reviews. We're not sponsored, endorsed, whatever. Anyway, that's all I'm doing tonight, y'all. Joel, I know we have a big show for TNA that people want to hear us talk about. So we'll get into that right now. But everyone, just want to let you know how I was doing tonight.
Well, I'm glad you let us know. And you know what? Tonight was a really, really fun pay-per-view tonight. The big news coming out of it, it's not about the titles, it's not about the matches, it's about the returns, and there were plenty of them, including
the
return of Broken Matt Hardy. And you know what? Because I am such a giving and benevolent host, I did my due diligence as a professional journalist, and I invited a much better journalist than myself to talk about it. He hosts the Extreme Life with Matt Hardy. John Alba's with
us. John, welcome to the show.
Yo, if you're looking for scoops, I got none because this is just as surprising to me as it was to you guys. So real quick,
you tweeted out, you know, you got worked. He kayfabed you the whole way. Mm-hmm. What was your immediate reaction when you saw Matt Hardy show up tonight?
Can I swear?
Yeah, absolutely.
wait like 10 seconds.
Oh, we got to pass the 5 minutes. We're not quite there yet.
Some people do 15, whatever.
No, honestly, I mean, I'm thrilled for him. I'm thrilled for him. It's, you know, I'll say this about Matt. All these people who like to clown the Hardys and all this stuff, they're 50 in 2024, nobody likes them, blah, blah, blah. I think Matt carries a chip on his shoulder with him, with everything that he does to prove the equity that they still have. And he is a sports entertainer at heart. And I think he recognizes what his skill set is today and what he's capable of today and where his strengths are today versus where his weaknesses are. And when presented with an opportunity to go out there and do character work, and do it in a place that he always enjoyed and appreciated, I think it's hard for him to pass up on. And more than anything, he's a very calculated guy. And I don't think it's a coincidence that this happened at this time in this place by any stretch of the imagination. I have not spoken to him. I do not know. This is complete raw reaction here. But that is my guess.
Was it on your list? Like when you were talking with Matt, I know you know, on the podcast kind of had an idea of who's talking to who and all that, but like, was it ever on your personal list that Matt could return to TNA? And was it something you would be as excited for compared to the other conversations?
I mean, excited, that's all subjective, right? That's whatever someone's personal taste is. But did I think this was on the table? Yes, I did think this was on the table. Especially by virtue of TNA's contract situations. I have no idea if he's signed. I genuinely have no idea. But I know there's a lot of opportunities for people to come and go in TNA right now. And I think that where Matt is right now in a position where he can really build some buzz and prove his equity. I mean, this, I'm not breaking anything here. He's talked about this on the podcast. He's talked about this publicly. He's wanted to be put in a position where he can show that he and the Hardys in general still have equity and still can garner responses and garner engagement from crowds. And I mean, you saw the reaction there. No matter what the size of the crowd was there in Vegas, they reacted huge for it. And the Broken Matt character is a beloved character in a lot of pro wrestling circles still to this day, 8 years later. And I think the proof is in the pudding on that.
It was good to see him. It was really good to see him. That was a shock to I think everybody.
I mean, I had no idea. I talked to him every day, and today I hadn't spoken to him. It's very odd that I hadn't, and I didn't think anything of it, honestly. I was just like, oh, whatever, he's with the family or whatnot. And he was sneaking off to Vegas and having some fun. And you know, do I think this is like indicative that he's done with AEW or not going to WWE or whatever? No, I don't. I think this opens up the plethora of possibilities for him. I think Matt could easily go and do an indie run and clean up on the indies as either Broken Matt or some other character. There's a lot of opportunities. He still carries a lot of equity. And I know that's hard for some people to digest, but it is reality. And what I'm most happy for, and I say this obviously very biasly, but genuinely as well, there's not a better dude in the industry than that guy. And to see him at nearly 50 get his flowers and get a chance to reap the rewards of putting all that work into that character over the years and have an opportunity. I know a lot of people weren't expecting something like this. Maybe some people will say, oh, do we really need to see this? I think that it's a great way to open the idea that pro wrestling in 2024 can be anything. I mean, it really can be anything. So yeah, I mean, I think that's cool.
Real quick, Joel. Have you messaged him yet? Or like, when will we be talking to him?
I did. I told him he was uninvited for my future wedding. That's not booked. Haven't heard back yet.
it's not a very kind thing to do when he's going to be the officiant.
That has been considered. Again, I have no one to get married to. I'm very single, but it's just the idea, you know?
Yes.
So listen, he obviously Matt Hardy just made your next week's podcast topic very easy for you. What's the first question you're going to ask?
How did he get his steak cooked out there is probably going to be my first question. But after that, no, I mean, look, man, I think the biggest thing is, and I want to say, like, on a real point here, this is the true beauty of the fluidity that we're experiencing in pro wrestling right now, where companies are more open-minded to letting talent work in different places. Free agency is more fluid. People are getting more places to work. It used to be, oh, well, if Matt showed up in TNA, he's on a 3-year contract there. That's not the case anymore. Now you recognize talent can bounce back and forth to all these different places, add their flavor to them, and end up putting out something that will entertain whatever the niche is or whatever the segment of the audience is. And, you know, are you going to get a five-star match out of the Hardys at this juncture? No, you're not. But if he can contribute to TNA and add some buzz to them with a recognizable character and someone who carries a lot of equity at their last name, then, hey, I think that's great for the industry. I think it's great for TNA, and I think it's great for Matt.
And just for what it's worth, like, I mean, like, this is me personally, and people are going to totally disagree because they have their own scales and everything. I consider Rock Hogan to be a 5-star match based on, like, reactions. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, the Hardys are still capable of that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I totally think there's enough dream matches and stuff that they can still be doing to get those, even with, like, the limited maybe physical. You know what I mean?
I have not spoken to him about this. I need to stress that I have not spoken to him about any of this. But I have no doubt, knowing Matt and how he operates, that this is very much an intentional message to any of the powers that be that says, look at the reaction I can still garner. Look at the interest I'm still capable of garnering. This is what you have in someone like me. And I have no doubt about it. That's just, I mean, he's talked about that sort of thing in public. So I have no doubt that that's what we're seeing here.
Dude, well, I was live at WrestleMania 33 in Orlando. Yeah. And like, that was one of the coolest, I mean, I was live at WrestleMania, like when Danielson won the main event and all that stuff. And like, I still put maybe the Hardy's return as like the biggest, most hyped reaction of anything I've ever been at. I mean, they can still, and that was a while back, but they're still capable.
Jensen, I was there for that. And that was the moment, the literal moment that I conceived the podcast idea in the stadium, like at that moment, because I was just saying, imagine capturing the storytelling around this. It's just really, really cool. I didn't mean to hijack your show, by the way. I just...
Oh, no, we appreciate you coming on here. No notice. This is awesome.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't want to keep you too long.
No, I was wearing my Bruce Springsteen t-shirt playing guitar.
I never know what people's hours are like. Mine got tossed around, so I get it. By the way, for those who are asking about Jeff Hardy and his contract status, Sean Rossap will have an update tomorrow on FightfulSelect.com.
Oh, will he?
The business. Yes, that is what he has said. People are asking, what does this mean for Jeff? And the response was FightfulSelect.com. On Sunday.
I could answer that right now, but I'll leave it to Fightful Select to do.
Listen, if you want to stay on the air, no one's going to stop you.
No, it's all good. I'll let Sean have that one.
For those who are asking about Motor City Machine Guns tomorrow at Dynasty, they're booked in London, Ontario, up the street from me. So I don't think you'll be seeing them, because that show, they have not been pulled from that show, and it is tomorrow. And that would not be great business. Speaking of Motor City Machine Guns and TNA and their departure as well. Do you see Matt jumping right into the world title picture? I mean, it seems that way, John. They had him, you know, hoist up the title and go after Moose. And for the second pay-per-view in a row, Moose gets, and I'm talking pay-per-view, not a PLE, Moose gets basically dumped on. He wins the match and then gets taken down. So it looks like Matt's going to challenge for the world title right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels that way, doesn't it? I think that, first off, I thought... biased again. I thought that twist of fate looked gnarly. I thought it was a good twist of fate. I mean, look, Moose is the perfect guy for Matt to have a sports entertainment match with. You know, you mix the physicality of Moose with someone who can work intelligently like Matt, and I think you'll have a fun little match. Yeah, again, this is not a situation where, at least I anticipate, I could be wrong, where Matt Hardy's going to come in and be the guy for TNA for 2-3 years. I don't foresee that being the case. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he will be. But again, I think that it's a great way to continue some buzz for TNA. It's a great way to continue some buzz for Matt. It's a win-win as far as I see it. And, you know, there's going to be people out there who crap all over it and, you know, to each their own. But I always say, if something's not for you, then don't watch it. If something is appealing to you, then give it a shot. That's how I look at things. And I think Matt is someone who can benefit that locker room a lot right now. And again, whether it's long-term or not, I have no idea. But my gut tells me this is him sending a message to a lot of different suitors out there of, hey, this is the response I'm capable of garnering and generating. And, you know, Joel, on the podcast, I mean, I really take a lot of pride in how transparent our podcast is. I mean, we have not BS'd anyone on any of this. He's been extremely transparent and honest about having a contract offer from AEW, talking to WWE. Yeah, we broached the idea of TNA in the past. So, yeah, I mean, nothing hidden about this. It's all, the proof is in the pudding there.
Yeah, and the thing with TNA is that if they are offering more paper appearance deals, then why not? Like why you not? Said, this increases Matt's equity in the wrestling sphere. It shows he can come back and do the character work and do the wrestling.
And two, like, I mean, you're a sports fan. Both of you guys are sports fans, like real sports fans. You know that so many times a player will leave a team on free agency, explore somewhere else for a year for a short-term deal or whatever it is, and then they'll go back.
Yep.
Or they'll, you know, it's when they, it's a prove it kind of thing, you know. And I think that's probably what his approach is. Again, me just, I'm not putting words in his mouth here. He'll have plenty to say this week, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, I would not take this as a shot at AEW or a shot at WWE or anything like that. I think he's just exploring options.
Well, I'm hoping we see a cinematic match soon, something in the Broken Universe, because I mean, people forget that. I mean, you know, that whole wave of match type was well,
and too, Jensen, like on top of that, like if you present new talent in a cinematic match, show a different side of them, show a different dynamic of them.
Yep.
Maybe you get a really entertaining Moose out of that. Maybe you get a really entertaining Josh Alexander out of that. I don't know, you know, whatever it is. And that's always a great opportunity for talent to step outside of their comfort zone too. This is a win-win for everyone I see, but I know there's going to be detractors and that's fine. Matt Hardy has a term for them on our podcast and it's called the FIs. You can figure out what that stands for, but that's that.
Well, before I let you go and before you plug the podcast, when are we going to see Broken John Alba show up in TNA then?
Ooh. Well, I've already got the gray streaks right here. I feel like I'm perpetually broken as a person. So
you just have to show up to a taping.
So, I just show up and I say, what's up? What's on catering? You know, oh, you got some Panera over there in the corner. All right, that's fine. You know, it's a, I don't know, emotionally broken. Don't read my Substack. If you read my Substack, you'll really get a piece into that. But I'm happy for my friend. I'm happy for someone who really deserves an opportunity to show what they're capable of bringing. And hopefully the TNA fans enjoy it. And you know, regardless of whether it's a one show cameo or if it's a year long contract, I have no idea. But whatever it is, I'd say just give it a shot, see what comes of it, and if it sucks, we'll talk about it on the podcast, and that's it. So yeah,
well, plug that podcast. And also, before you, sorry, I'm gonna do this again.
No.
Now I'm very interested in the relationship with Ed Nordholm, because that has clearly changed. Ed is much more involved with TNA now than even when he was when Scott was there. So things have changed. Ed is back in the fold of TNA. And of course, Matt and Jeff, when they left, they had a whole go around with WWE and Ed about the Broken Hardy name and universe.
Yeah,
so I'm interested in what that relationship.
Once they got the lawsuit settled and they acquired the property, everything was under the bridge and everything was smooth sailing. And Matt's done TNA appearances. Remember when TNA and AEW were doing the collaboration, Matt showed up with Private Party in TNA. So I don't foresee any issues there on that front. And the owl, you know, may he rest. I think everything's totally kosher and good. And you know, I mean, look, it, you know, you guys know better than anyone, TNA locker room right now is a great locker room. A lot of really good talent there, and a lot of exciting smart up and coming talent that have a lot to offer. So I'm sure that's appealing too. And, you know, fresh matchups, fresh people to work with. I just interviewed Nemeth this past week, and I mean, he just talked about how amazing it's been just stepping in there and seeing Speedball and Ali doing their things. Like, and hell yeah, right? Like, a land of opportunity as far as I see it.
Yeah, they've got a great locker room and they speak highly of it. They're very protective of it in the best way. Before I let you go, now actually do the thing. Plug the podcast. What you got going on?
Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, man. Every single Friday, wherever you get your podcasts, extremehardy.com. I really do feel it's like the most transparent and honest podcast that has ever existed in pro wrestling. So I hope people give it a shot. And I'm sure this week will be a newsworthy one. He just texted me back and said, well, it looks like we got something to talk about this week. So there, yeah. You go. That's that. But I appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate you, man.
Be well, guys.
Thanks, John. John Alba. There you go. You get the scoops.
Yeah, that
was great. We figured why John said he was kind of blindsided by all this, by the news, kayfabed. So we said, let's get him in here to talk about it. So thank you to John Alba for joining us. Let's dig into this whole thing, shall we?
Yes.
Believe it or not, there was an entire TNA pay-per-view tonight, and it did culminate with the return of Matt Hardy, but let's get through the whole thing. Countdown. We don't have to spend too much time on much of it, but Ace of Base and Leon Slater defeat the Rascals. This was a breakout showcase match for both Myron Reed and Leon Slater, and I love that. Leon Slater gets the win for his team. It looks like he is primed for an X Division run, whether that's title or not, doesn't matter. He's up there. What do you think of this six-man to open up?
I love the actual match, and my brother was actually watching the pre-show with me before the pay-per-view started. He was over here hanging out, and he was really into the match. Like, he liked all six guys, and like I talk to my brother pretty often on my shows and stuff, because he's like, I consider him to be like way more knowledgeable than just like a casual wrestling fan, but he isn't a wrestling, like, he doesn't watch it himself, like, on his own, but he's just around me so much that he just sees it all the time. And when stuff pops him, I take note of that, because I'm like, if he likes that, I bet a lot of people who don't even watch wrestling would probably like that, if that makes sense. And when I was watching that match and he was watching with me, he liked everyone involved. He was like, damn, all these guys are great. And he really liked Leon Slater. He loved the Swanton 450. He thought that was a really badass move. And I agree, obviously. Like, I'm a fan of all these guys. For years, I was talking about how Myron Reed, and this is, I mainly talk about this stuff on the weekend or over on Fightful Select, if you want to get like deep dive thoughts on like the indie scene. I have a show every weekend. It'll be this Monday because of everything going on tomorrow. But that said, I've been talking about Myron Reed a long time. I used to go years ago. I'd drive from Nashville to Atlanta to watch him at Glory Pro. And fun fact, he accidentally won the Glory Pro Crown of Glory Championship, their heavyweight title, when he was like really, really new to the scene. And he accidentally won because like the ref counted three when he wasn't supposed to. And he had a lot of responsibility really quickly in that company. I've always followed his career. And he was always the fourth Rascal, but a lot of people didn't know that because the other three guys were all on TNA together and everything. That all said, great to see Myron Reed and all the love he's getting lately. He's been getting pushed big in GCW and JCW as well lately, so he's doing great. And Leon Slater was killing it on the UK indie scene, and then had some big GCW showings. He's still only, what, like 20 years old or something? I mean, he's super young, and he's going to have a super, super bright future. TNA was really cool to give him a contract when they did, with kind of like the rebrand. So, yeah. I can't say enough good things about everyone in this match. And cool to see Slater get the win with that Swanton 450.
And I noticed earlier today, Trey Miguel was asked on Twitter, what do you think about being in the opening contest on a countdown? And, you know, some wrestlers would, you know, take offense to that or just be upset about that. No, this is a common thread that I've seen in TNA from the wrestling, from the wrestlers. They see it as a badge of honor. They get to open the show. They get to set the tone. They get to steal the show. They get to do whatever it takes to make a mark. And that's what Trey Miguel said he was going to do. That's what Steve Macklin told me back at Hard to Kill in Vegas back in January. That's what he told me. The same thing about having a match with Rich Swann on the countdown. It was about setting the tone. And I think tonight that was the good first match to put out there for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. And me and Jeremy talked about it on the spotlight. I was talking about how like this is the kind of match you would want to have on the pre-show if you're trying to get people who are either on the fence about ordering the show or just getting the random YouTube viewer like that just hits their algorithm and they just see wrestling is live right now and they turn it on. They're like, wait, who are these guys? And like, they're flying all over the place. And like, maybe you make a fan right away and they're like, I'll buy this show. I got nothing else going on right now. Like, so I totally agree with that. I think that's, and you also have the potential to have even more people see you have your match on YouTube on, you know what I mean? Like, enough people might see you on YouTube versus like you even being on the pay-per-view. The UFC has that strategy with their, with their undercard. Sometimes they'll load up some of like their last fights on the undercard. And a lot of those fighters like those positions, because even though it's on ESPN Plus and not on pay-per-view, way more people saw it for free on ESPN Plus than on pay-per-view. So they're still getting a lot of exposure and getting their name out there and stuff. So
speaking of exposure, if you haven't already, leave a thumbs up on the video and subscribe to us here at youtube.com/Fightful. If you haven't already, subscribe to FightfulSelect.com, the best $5 in the business. You want Jeff Hardy news? We got it coming tomorrow with Matt Hardy joining TNA. What does that mean for Jeff? How about we tell you tomorrow at FightfulSelect.com? Also, you can donate a super chat any amount. Get your questions statement read on the air, because I haven't done that yet. We got a couple to open the show. Ryan Sullivan sends one saying, welcome back, Joel. Fun pay-per-view. I agree. Fun times. Thank you very much, Ryan, for the super chat. And Ryan Lambert saying, we love you. I love you too, Ryan, and everyone for hanging out with us tonight. I appreciate you. We're going to get to that last one in a few minutes. So, Digital Media Championship. Laredo Kid defeats Crazy Steve. Steven Jensen, for the longest time, what have I told you about luchadors and TNA and Impact?
Oh, geez. I'm you're putting me on the spot. What have you always told me?
They lose.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, that has been quite a kind of a thing. But he won tonight.
He won. This is a turning point. This is huge. This is like celebrations in the street. A luchador actually not only wins a match. By the way, the only time the luchadors win a match is when Conan is involved and they're doing a six-way. And who is there. Listen, that's, look it up. Look it up. If there's one thing TNA does, is whenever there's a luchador, someone in a mask in a match, they lose. Not tonight. New digital media champion is crowned. Laredo Kid defeats Crazy Steve. The Luchador curse is over. I have a much more important question. This match was supposed to happen at Hard to Kill. Or actually, Laredo Kid was supposed to be... I wrote this down wrong. Laredo Kid ended up having to fill in for Trent Seven in the X Division Showdown. That was at Hard to Kill. I think he was primed for a digital media championship match before that. They were doing the Tommy Dreamer stuff. But regardless... here we are. Laredo Kid wins the digital media championship. Where do we go from here? Because Crazy Steve was doing okay, right?
So that's where I'm going to actually have to defer to you a little bit on this, because I still am a bit confused as to the point of this championship belt. Like, and I have been since the beginning of it. Like, what would you say about Crazy Steve's run that you enjoyed about him holding the title? And then, like, what do you think Laredo Kid is going to potentially do with it?
Oh, you know, there's a lot of kicking in the dick and forking.
Well, of course. I mean, those things. But right. I'm just saying, like, I just don't understand why they even have this title belt. Like, I'm not trying to be, like, a buzzkill. Like, I'm happy for Laredo Kid that he won something. I think he's a talented performer. The Laredo fly off the top is badass finisher. You know what I mean? Like, all respect to him. I've always given respect to Crazy Steve. I used to see him in the Nashville Fairgrounds. He was like one of like the headliners there. Like when he'd be like not with TNA and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, what do you?
Yeah, I get it. I really. Yeah. He was with the digital media champions, and someone in the chat, Scott, says Laredo Kid is going to be like all the other digital media champions and never use social media. The last guy to do it happens to be the longest reigning champion, and that's Joe Hendry. Hendry was really the best digital media champion because he utilized the title as a vehicle through social media. When Jordynne Grace won it, we all made jokes and like half serious jokes about her taking her OnlyFans and having matches on her OnlyFans defending the digital media championship. And like, again, synergy, right, moving people to her OnlyFans while promoting TNA and Impact. That's not what they did. I don't know what the point of the digital media championship is, because it's not like they have a digital media special where they're airing digital media championship matches. They do have on their YouTube every week a digital media Monday special match, but it's never for that title. I don't know what the point is of the title, other than a low card title, which is fine, but it has nothing to do with digital media.
Right. And that's what's so confusing, is like that exact aspect of it is like that they don't use it for any sort of social media. And I just, when I think of like, you know, so when I think of that title belt, I would think of someone like Matt Cardona, right? Like that makes sense because, like, you know, he's got a lot of followers. He's super active on all social medias. He's constantly promoting and he pops up at all these different companies and stuff. Like Laredo Kid is like the last person that I think about when I'm like, oh, who am I going to, like, you know, who's cooking on X right now? You know, not like, I mean, who, I don't. And that's anyway, good for him that he won. I mean, it was a good like 9 minute match for the, you know.
And that's the thing with Cardona. He was a great digital media champion. He was great to have because he did do all the things that you said he did.
Right.
I don't know what the point of the title is when the champion isn't known for social media.
Yeah.
You know who'd be a great digital media champion, believe it or not? Right now it's Top Dollar. It's AJ Francis.
Yeah. Honestly, yes. Because so you mentioned Joe Hendry with that title, who did a great job with it. See, if he was still the champion going into like tonight, which, you know, we'll get to that. But like, if he was still the champion coming into tonight's match with Rich Swann, for instance, and they ran all this stuff that we're going to talk about with like how they did like the editing in with like the AI music video or whatever, like that's all stuff that like a social media champion would do. You know what I mean? Like you'd put that on Twitter and you'd put that like, and you'd meme on people because you're the digital media champion. Like, so yes, I totally agree. I think Rich Swann and AJ Francis, like that group, like those, someone in that little feud or whatever, that would make sense for the digital media title. I agree with that for sure.
Well, it exists, and Laredo Kid now is in possession of it. The Knockouts tag team titles are on the line. Spitfire, they defend successfully against Decay. This was really funny to watch the commentary team try to explain how we got to this match, and it was basically Spitfire beat MK Ultra and MK Ultra beat Decay, but now Decay get their contractually obligated rematch, even though MK Ultra didn't get there, and Killer Kelly is nowhere to be found. Because honestly, the big news is everything happening outside of the ring going into this match and afterwards. Lars Fredriksson from Rancid accompanies Spitfire to the ring, does the very classic manager shtick, carries the titles, babyface manager the whole way through. And then after Spitfire get the win, you see Masha Slamovich with the chain at the top of the stage, and out comes Alicia Edwards. And all I can think to myself is, they're going to do a backstage promo where Masha speaks fluent Russian, and Alicia's going to absolutely like nail the interpretation. She is going to completely translate it, and no one's going to question how Alicia Edwards knows Russian.
I like
that. And I'm all for it.
I like that. I mean, that was, unless there's something I had missed in the build to this show, that seems super random, the two of them. I understand like Killer Kelly not being there, so Masha needs a partner. I get that, but like, and then, I mean, to be fair, they tried to explain it later in the show when Alicia is talking about, you know, she wants a title belt also because like the rest of the group is champions, and that's really the only title I guess that would make sense for her to be going after, so she would need a partner. I don't hate the idea of Masha, I guess, being a part of that group. I mean, I just want them to do something with Masha because I'm such a big fan of hers. Just like get her on the show, push her, you know. So if it's something good for Masha, I'm cool with it. Yeah.
They basically had Masha trying to put together a list approaching Masha. Masha saying, I don't know, I don't know. And then now they're going to work together. They called it like a partnership of convenience.
Yes. Yes.
So,
and
that's what they're going to do. And I hope Kelly comes back soon enough.
Yep. And as far as the actual match, like I thought it was a solid match, you know, to close out the to close out the pre-show. And I really like the finisher, the Spitfire like double team finisher that I do. That's a badass move.
So I've talked about this on the post show with Cresta, which, sorry, we took 3 weeks off. I apologize. But when we did discuss it, one thing that was kind of awkward to me is the setup for that can take a long time. And I think tonight they had to wait a long time to hit that fireman's carry power bomb move, and it always has to be Danny Luna getting the pinfall. So that's the one thing about finishers that can get a little bit awkward with tag teams, is who hits it and who does the pin. Like it's got to be done right. It's been smoother, but I'm hoping that they're really working on how to make the transitions work.
That's fair. And I say like the move itself is a badass move, but yes. I'm with you. I mean, for people, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus here, but there's people on the weekend or I talk about pretty consistently where like they, for some reason, can't hit their finishing move and just like won't change it. And it's kind of weird. So anyway, yeah, I'm with you, Joel. Good pre-show though for Rebellion.
it ends with the Ali sit-in. Two guys come to the ring and they're just like, no, this shouldn't be happening. Ali versus Jake something is not good. And then Diener beats them both up because of Cousin Jake. So there's that.
Oh, by the way, Diener comes out and cuts a Rock promo. He comes out and like does like, it doesn't matter. Like you know, with, and then he asks the people what they, we're here because of what the people want.
That's the new Diener gimmick. Right. He does what the people want him to do. He's literally taking fan vote. He is Cyber Sunday Dienering this entire show. And like, there's a part of me that just hopes he goes to an audience that just tells him to do the wrong thing. And he does it because he wants what the audience wants to do.
I like the commitment to pleasing the audience. I like that idea. It's funny. It just you know, he's basically, I just thought it was really funny because he basically cut, like, remember back in the day, but the early TNA, remember Sonny Siaki, who was out there like trying to be the Rock? They were like actually like made him like the Rock. Like this Diener thing just kind of reminded me. I was like, this, you just came out here got a Rock promo. Anyway, I'm happy for Diener, and it makes sense with his history with Jake, with like the cousins and everything. But
yeah, anyway. Let's get to the main show. The X-Men Championship is on the line. Mustafa Ali defeats Jake something, and the whole time all I can think of is option C, but I guess we're not there yet. Instead, we had a really solid match between these two. A little bit of some foolery, let's face it. Ali gets his security involved, hits a 450 with the security holding down Jake something at one point, but it wasn't that gets the job done. Ali rakes the eyes of Jake something, sends him into the post, rolls him through into a pinning combination while grabbing the ropes. The rest of the match, let's talk about it, because there was plenty going on. What do you think of this whole thing?
Well, I really like how Ali's doing in TNA in general. Like, you know, the reactions he's getting and his whole presentation, everything is really, really good. I know I told you behind the scenes, I was having a little bit of issue with my internet throughout this match. So I did miss a good chunk of the beginning of it, unfortunately. But I've always been a big fan of Jake, similar to Myron Reed. He was at a lot of those Glory Pro shows I'm talking about from back in like 2018 or whatever. So I've always liked him. And I like that he's so part of the X Division, and how they, on commentary, they even put over like Mustafa and his group is basically saying like Jake something doesn't, you know, he doesn't belong in this match because he's not X Division style. But they make sure to let everyone know on commentary, like, it's not about weight limits, it's about no limits, which we've always heard about the X Division. But I thought it was, you know, it made sense with Ali grabbing the ropes to get the dirty victory and all that stuff. And also, on top of that, I was curious, like, who do you think is the next challenger for the X Division title now?
That's a good question. And I think they're going to go back to Jake something.
I could see that, I guess. Yeah. With it being him not getting a clean victory tonight.
They've got a really interesting story with the 450. That was the first time anyone has kicked out of the 450 in TNA. And also they protected the 450 because they did it with the service, Secret Service, holding down Jake something while he hit it. So there is a bit of a reason to go back to the match, do it again. And also, you know, both men hit their finishers. Jake something hit into the void, which is the black hole slam, and Ali got his foot on the bottom rope. So like, there's a reason to revisit this match. Obviously the finish was the reason why you do it, with Ali getting his hands on the rope to get leverage and get the pin. But Jake something seems like the next guy up if it's not going to be an option C cash in for Ali, which honestly, Nemeth didn't get the title tonight. Sorry, shocker and spoilers, but this would have made the most sense. Instead, it looks like he's going to keep going with the X Division title.
I like that though. Jake something can go in the ring with everybody. He's very unique talent. And TNA is really lucky to have him, to be completely honest. Like, I think he'd be really good in like really any major company. With his mixture of size and his in-ring ability and his athleticism and everything. So I think that, because I can't imagine he's going to beat Ali for the X Division title, even if they run it back. I'd imagine, because Ali is, I mean, he's needs to be in a good spot as well in the company with all the buzz that he has, his in-ring ability, and how long people waited for him to get out of the WWE system. Like, people have been waiting to be a fan of his like this. So I'm not against them keeping the title on Ali by any means. I think he should be the champion. But I just kind of hope coming out of all this, they have a plan for Jake.
Me too. Especially for all the reasons you added, including he's ready for this. He's ready for a title run in TNA.
And when he's coming back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. When he came back, that was like we're going to put the machine behind you. We're going to do something with you. this was the, I think, the first chapter in getting there in terms of you've given him some big wins. You've gotten him to a big title match one-on-one. Now we see how you handled it. Now we're going to revisit the match and maybe you'll get the victory.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just finished my Woo Energy drink, by the way, so no more of that. I was considering opening another one right here on the stream just to prove to you they keep exploding, but I can't drink another one of those and be able to fall asleep tonight. So Thursday morning, I'll open another one.
They also taste awful. So what are you really doing here?
Dude, if people go back and watch, anyway, if that's going to be an Easter egg for anybody who goes back and watches this show. Like, as I was drinking, it was hard for me to drink that as I was trying to on stream just now. Anyway, it's all gone now. Sorry, we can move on from all that. I got plenty of energy though. I'll give it that. It's got like 6 cups of coffee's worth of caffeine in that thing.
Good Lord.
I mean three cups of it's on my floor and on my shirt, but
oh my goodness. By the way, check out the interview that Jeremy and I did with Mustafa Ali on In the Weeds. Sean Ross Sapp was there. He was extremely unprofessional to Mustafa Ali. So go check out that interview. See how two real professionals like Jeremy and myself handle an X Division champion like Mustafa Ali. Will you? Okay. Right. Rich Swann takes on Joe Henry, beats the man, but not without a little bit of help. Sean Merriman showed up.
Yeah.
But first of all, jacked. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At one point, he and Top Dollar, AJ Francis, get into a bit of a skirmish on the outside. And then Merriman just gets up, takes off his shirt, opens up the barricade, puts himself in the ring. Like, there was no, just goes into the ring. Like, nobody stops him. No one was going to try. Starts, you know, jawjacking with AJ Francis. They go tete-a-tete. And then he turns around and he decks Joe Henry. Merriman joins First Class. And it feels like Sean Merriman might work a match at Slammiversary, which is a wild statement to make in 2024. Rich Swann gets the win. Joe Henry treated like garbage.
Yes. So on the Merriman stuff, there's going to be a lot of people on. I don't know how familiar. I mean, because I can't remember how long it's been since he played. It's been a while. I'm going to look on his Wikipedia actually to see when he retired. I think 2012, I think, is the last year he played, it looks like. So, I mean, it's been a while. Like, I remember he done some stuff with the WWE before. Like, he was a part of, like, some of their shows. He's always been a wrestling fan. And I know he also attempted, like, an MMA run of some kind. I don't know if he ever actually fought. I can't remember. If I took enough time reading his Wikipedia, I'd probably be able to figure it out pretty quick. But he's always been a fight fan. He's always been a pro wrestling fan. I was familiar with him as an NFL player. He was a very good player for the Chargers. But in like 2024, it is kind of random. But I mean, he is in great shape still. So I'll give him that credit. But I also say the second he jumped that guardrail, I called that turn immediately. I was like, oh, he's gonna wind up hitting Henry, like for sure. But I'll also say I've touched on it before when I was talking about the digital media kind of missed opportunities with that championship. The stuff that Joe Henry does, the memes he can make out of people with these music videos and stuff. There you go. It's actually
that is nightmare fuel. If you watch it, it's so bad.
That's so good. I think that's really, really well done. I think Joe Henry, I know Cresta would agree. And he's obviously he's been, you know, utilized on the show. He's on like all the pay-per-views and PLEs and everything. They use him, but like, I still feel like he's still almost like a little underrated ever since he had that. He had this match with Moose like over a year or so ago that we covered.
That a Rebellion last year?
It might've been.
I think I was there for that match.
They had a banger of a one-on-one match. It might've even been for that digital media championship.
It was a combat match.
Yeah, it was a really good match. Yeah. And I think it was the best match on like the whole pay-per-view that night. I remember really liking it. And so anyway, ever since then, I've really felt like they could be doing more with that guy. But anyways.
It was at No Surrender last year.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. What date? What was the date on that?
It was February.
February. Okay, so yeah, right around a year ago.
Yeah.
A little over a year ago. But anyway, I mean, and this is also, I think I saw Sean tweet about this and it got me thinking that I don't know if this is the this is the first time I can remember Swan really being a heel outside of like maybe some maybe brief stuff on the indies, like, you know, pre WWE and everything. I can't remember him really being a heel anywhere.
The only place he's ever really been a heel was in Evolve, and he turned on Johnny Gargano. That was about it. This is the first time he's done it. And when they were starting this whole story at Hard to Kill with Joe Hendry and AJ Francis, and then Rich Swann got involved, I'm like, oh, they're going to turn Swann because it is time.
Right.
Rich Swann was floundering, myself and Cresta Star. And I think even you, Jensen, we were sitting here, the three of us at different points saying like, what are we doing with Rich Swann? What's the point? And this is now a potential resurgence for Rich Swann.
It works well. Like, I think that group is like, that's, and I mean, it looks like Sean Merriman will probably be like a part of it going forward, at least to some degree. I think he'll be involved. I don't think this is a one-off, so good for him.
AJ Francis told many people that his NFL connections run deep, so this is just another example of that. By the way, the WWE deal that he was talking about, he actually talked about on Renee Paquette's podcast when she was still doing it. He said that the Lights Out branding was the snag that stopped the deal from going through with WWE.
You want to know what was really funny? And timing was just really strange. So my brother was actually still over here during that match. And I have two TVs in my living room. One of them I was watching Rebellion on, and while this match was on, the other TV I was actually catching up on the most recent episode of WWE Most Wanted Treasures, or whatever that show is called, on A&E. They did the WCW episode. It's like an hour and a half long, and I was watching it, and my brother is the one who pointed it out. He goes, wait a second. And I was like, yeah, he used to host that show on the other screen. Yeah,
different guy.
Yeah, he was. I was like such a random thing that I he was on my screen on TNA, and I was watching that show that he used to be the host of for the WWE. But he was a really, and I'll also say that show used to be a lot better when they were actually out like trying to hunt items from like collectors and like barter with them and stuff. Now they just go to like to the wrestlers and have them just like, you know, give it to them, or have them borrow it. You know what I mean? Like. Or if you're the Hulkster, you know, you get like 10 grand for your stuff, you know, brother. But
it's my beach house, brother.
Yeah. But anyway, that's off topic. But I just thought it was kind of funny how I was watching AJ Francis on TNA while I was watching the hidden show, gem show, that he's not a part of anymore, unfortunately.
Just for anyone's nightmares. There you go.
Oh,
this part was especially weird. I don't know what we're doing. It was the glasses and the everything was. Wrong.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of like a Firefly Funhouse type thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, because like the eyes, especially with AJ, like it's like the, like, you know, like they're almost like burn, you know, they're not there.
Everything was creepy. Terrible. Anyway.
Yeah. Rich Swann wins
the match. Full Metal Mayhem. Frankie Kazarian defeats Eric Young. This had a scary finish.
Oof.
You had Frankie Kazarian going for the flux capacitor from the top rope. Eric Young didn't fully rotate. And we'll talk about the full of this match, but really that was the moment. Eric Young doesn't fully rotate. He did get his hand out, so he didn't go head first onto the table that was set up in the ring. But instead he kind of nicked the side of the table, cut his head. You could see very visibly that his head was cut open the hard way. Looked like he was knocked out. The good news is he did get up after the bell. He did have some help from referees. Tommy Dreamer was out there, but it looks like we're waiting for a few updates, but he did get up under his own power. He did get help to the back, but hell of a scary finish for Eric Young coming out of this match. Frankie Kazarian does get the victory. Feels like Kazarian's moving up the ladder in TNA. What do you think of this matchup?
I thought this was a really good match between the two. I've always liked Eric Young a lot. And Frankie Kazarian, I was a really big fan of, like, back in the day, all the way up until he was, like, in the WWE. And then, like, he wouldn't cut his hair in, like, the weirdest turn of events ever. And then he was gone from WWE in, like, a few weeks. I still feel like that was, like, one of just the weirdest, like, he could have been something there, I really felt like. But I've always liked Kazarian. I've always liked his in-ring work, and I've always actually preferred him as a singles guy versus a tag team guy. I've always liked him better as a singles guy than like with SCU, for instance, just personally. Especially, I never liked the Kazarian Michael Shane team back in the day. Do you remember those guys together? That's a throwback. Michael Shane, aka they had to change his name. It was Michael Shane, I think, was his second name, maybe. They wound up changing his name at some point. Anyway, it doesn't matter. They were like co X Division champions. It's so weird. Anyways, was it like Matt Bentley? Did she name like Matt Bentley or something?
Yeah, Matt Bentley. Well, that's what he is now. That's is that a shoot name? That's a shoot name.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, Serotonin, Greg Carter. Yeah, that's they were part of Serotonin with Johnny Devine. See, I'll bring back some throwbacks from the old TNA. But anyway, these guys are both OG TNA, and I like that Kazarian's character is currently the whole king of TNA thing, where he's like, you know, come back from AEW. He was one of the founders really of AEW when you think about it, like one of the first people that they hired. And anyways, I thought this was a really solid match between the two. Do you think that was the finish, or do you think they just ended it because of the way that Eric landed?
I think Kazarian was supposed to win. I think that was the finish.
Hey guys, have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? I saw a video he made and I was shocked. He is in his 80s, still kicking butt, working out, staying active. He looks like he's got more energy, can work out longer, even has plenty of that energy left over for his grandkids, and he did this by making one change. He said that he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife even started doing this thing too. She's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger, her body looks leaner, has energy all day. And Chuck's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their health. Staying active is important. Moving around keeps you feeling good. Making sure that you take care of your gut health, your digestion, just overall, is also very important. Right now, you can go to mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Watch Chuck's video right now. That's mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Check out what Chuck Norris has to say. What's got him feeling so good these days? He explains everything, and you won't believe how simple it is.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I do. I think those two are good enough to know that if they had to do a roll-up or do something different with Eric, then they would have. But no, that felt like the finish to me, because they hit everything else they needed to in that match. That was a high enough spot that could have been the finish. If it wasn't the fade to black, then it would have been that flux capacitor.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that was the finish as well. And either way, like when that happens, like just do the safe thing and get out of there. But I did notice, and I don't know if this is totally because I only saw the one replay. When I haven't seen this in like slow motion or anything else, but just worth noting potentially, like when Eric Young landed and I noticed he was bleeding, I saw on the replay that the ref, like there was something underneath Eric Young's head that might have been like debris from the table or something. It looked like a nut and bolt or something off of the table maybe, and I don't know if maybe he landed on that, like I don't know, but it was a nasty landing, and obviously what's most important is that Eric Young is okay, which we all obviously hope that he is. So yeah, but because they're good for Kazarian as far as like, you know, I feel like TNA isn't putting this whole King of TNA kind of gimmick and like run on him that he's got going for him right now, and then he gets this win and then they don't have plans for him to go towards the main championship.
So. Oh, the moment that Frankie Kazarian called himself the King of TNA, you knew exactly what match he's going to have.
King of the Mountain, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know what's coming up in July.
Oh, right. Okay. So that's okay. Well, do you think he actually wins that thing?
I don't know if that's a title match, King of the Mountain. It could be a number one contendership,
right. King
of the Mountain. And if it is, I think Kazarian should win. I think the babyface wins the big match at Slammiversary, whoever is going for the TNA title. We also, again, going back to Matt Hardy, we don't know if Matt is going to be here for a pay-per-view cycle, for a month, for a year. Like John Alba said, he doesn't know either, but that's kind of the joy of TNA right now, is you don't know how long these deals are. So right. As a result, it could be nothing, or it could be more substantial for Matt Hardy. Those details will come out in the coming days, I'm sure of it. Regardless, I think Kazarian wins a King of the Mountain match between now and having a world title match, however that lands.
I mean, that's a good call. I think that for sure is going to happen.
Well,
but he'll win a King of the Mountain match.
Yeah. What else happened was Steve Maclin comes out. Of course, you know, he wasn't on the card. He wasn't planned. And he says, hey, look at me. I got a new contract. Everything, all demands were met, except for one thing. And I'm thinking to myself, a world title match? And no, he's just a match. He just wanted a match tonight. But Santino Marella comes out and he says, oh, I also signed somebody new, and they're eager to work. Mike Santana comes back to TNA Wrestling. He's now poised for a singles run, which I'm very excited for. If you have not seen Mike Santana work singles, it is imperative that you go and find some of the stuff he's done. I can tell you locally, I'm in Toronto. He is the Greektown Wrestling Champion. He's got House of Glory under his belt right now. The man is out there working. This was no different. Santana defeats Steve Maclin in a very good match. These two worked well together. It was a little clunky at the beginning, but they got it done. And this was solid. Both men now have claims to be in TNA for a little bit longer. What did you think of the match?
I liked it. It was a quick match, but it established Mike Santana as immediate threat to like the main event scene of TNA for sure. Obviously already has the history as a tag team with LAX, with Ortiz and everything before he signed to AEW. I mean, I remember him when they used to be called EYFBO, him and Ortiz back on the indie scene. And speaking of him on singles matches, I've seen him live. I always get it blended together. I've seen him live at either Terminus and or Battle Slam in Atlanta. I always forget which show, because those are both run by Jonathan Gresham, and Baron Black mainly runs Battle Slam, but it's like the same. Well, it's like sister companies with one another, basically. It's one of those things where, like, I know I've seen him live multiple times in those companies.
I'm pretty sure he worked Terminus 2.
That makes sense, because there were only two Terminus shows, I think.
Yeah, and I remember seeing it and being like, what? Santana's working a singles? Like, I was just confused at the time, and then he opened my eyes, because it did. I think he worked Gresham that night. I'm going to look it up while you talk, but I remember that being a match.
If you can find, I know he worked, and he had over Battle Slam also. He did really well. And I remember the Terminus match. I remember being there at Terminus, seeing him, because I specifically remember being bummed out that I didn't bring one of his action figures with me to try to get it signed. I was like, this was a giant missed opportunity that I'd bring a Santana figure to get signed. And he was right here in front of me.
He worked, it was Terminus 2. He worked Gresham for the ROH world title, and it was pure rules.
Yeah, and he does, and that sold me, similar to what you were saying, Joel. When I started seeing him live doing singles matches, I was sold as a singles guy. So I obviously TNA is sold as well on the idea, and he didn't really get much of a fair shake in AEW. like, he came back from injury, and then like him and Ortiz had a really compelling story with one another, and it got kind of like relegated to like Rampage and stuff, and just like and before you knew it, he just wasn't part of the mix and not even in the company. So I think he's a guy who's also probably got a chip on his shoulder, in probably a good way. Like, he's probably out to prove that AEW should have done more with him, and that him and Ortiz should have been able to, you know, I don't know what exactly the issues between the two of them really were at the end of the day, but from what the sounds of it, it seems that at least a part of it was like Santana just wanted more. Like, he was like, he's like, I'm ready for more. There's more I could be doing. And maybe Ortiz just wasn't, maybe he was more comfortable in the scenario situation that he, I don't know, but either way, Santana seems very ambitious that he wants more. And I think this is going to be an opportunity for him to get more, have a good run in TNA as a singles performer, and then see where it goes. Like John Alba was saying, I mean, for all we know, Santana kills it in TNA, pops up in GCW, you know, does this or that, and then like he's back in AEW as a single star down the line. I mean, you never know. So
A lot of places he can go. People asking in the chat, could he go X Division, world title route? There are places for Santana. Macklin is another very interesting conundrum to me because he's a former world champion. He is a top-level star. He is the kind of guy you want around your roster because he's very smart in this business and very good in the ring. He loses tonight, but he gains stock because he worked with an incoming talent and made him look like $1 million. So there's something there. What do we do with Macklin moving forward?
That's a good question. I was actually kind of thinking that myself while I was watching the show. Kind of everything you just said about that, because he's obviously a really well-established, you know, performer in TNA. But there's also something to be said about that as far as like kind of the flip side is in the positive is that because Macklin is so good and has gotten to the spot that he's in the company, it made it so that it was a big deal that Santana came in and beat him tonight. Like if Macklin doesn't do that body of work before tonight up to this point in the company, if Santana just comes in and just squashes, you know, I don't know. I don't want to throw anyone under the bus. Squashes just somebody else, right? That maybe you don't care about nearly as much. It wouldn't mean as much. He came in and he beat Macklin. So it's like he beat Macklin. It was convincing. He's probably going to be in the world title mix.
Yeah, there's no reason why he shouldn't be. And if I'm Macklin and I'm doing creative, you come out at the TV tapings and you say one of those agreed upon statements in my contract is one of the demands is a world title match. And he just runs it back because, you know, he says all demands met. We don't know what those demands are, but that could be one of them.
Yep, that's a good point.
So we'll see how that plays out. But he is someone that, again, when he's around on your roster and he's healthy, you want that person. So it's good. By the way, get your super chats in, get your Humper chats in. I didn't mention Humper chats earlier, but if you do, just say TNA in your message because the post collision show at least was going on when we got on the air. But just add TNA to your Humper chat or on your super chat. Say whatever you want. Get your questions even around the air. But don't be a dick, but otherwise it's fine. I do want to point out, by the way, at one point Macklin jumps into a DVD from Santana. That was really smooth. Loved it. That's about it for that match. Tag titles on the line. The system defeats B-Ball Mountain. This match is four guys that just know how to wrestle very well. And there's one thing that I actually really like about both these teams, Steven Jensen, and that is they both have two sets of tag team finishers at their disposal, and they made use of them tonight. I love it. What did you think of System and Speedball Mountain?
This was my favorite match of the show, actually. I had high expectations for it because I'm a big Speedball fan, as everybody I'm sure knows that listens to any podcast that I do for years. I've been talking, and I know you're a big Speedball fan as well. I remember you talking about him, like when he was still having his issues, like getting into the States and everything, like about how it's like when he finally gets over here, like he's ready to break out, and he does nothing but put on bangers in every single company he's a part of. It's consistent. He's the most reliable person maybe in the entire wrestling industry as far as like put him in any scenario and it's going to be great. And I think Trent Seven is very talented as well. I think that him and Bailey complement each other really well. Obviously Trent Seven has a ton of tag team experience throughout his career with Mustache Mountain and everything, British Strong Style. And the System, honestly, like, I'm not huge on the tag team of Edwards and Myers, but this was a really good match. And that's something I say consistently about Eddie Edwards. Like every time we talk about him on these PLEs, it's always the same thing that comes out of my mouth about like, wasn't that hype for the match going into it, but like then the match delivers, you know, and you're like, yeah, he's always going to have good matches. It's just hard for me to like, he's just been there for so long that I'm just like, you know, but at the same time, I've always been a Brian Myers fan, and I'm a really big fan of him on a personal level as far as like his action figure collecting and him training wrestlers and all this stuff. So I like everybody involved in this match, and I thought that the match itself was really, really good. And like you said, because they have multiple tag team finishers, there was like four different times I thought this match was going to be over. And the closest one being the one that was broken up by the spear, like when it was like the spear into everybody to break it up.
Yeah, that was the Birminghammer into the Ultimate Weapon on Edward Edwards. Myers breaks up the pin because Speedball Spears, Myers into Seven, who's pinning Edwards. It was good stuff. Yes. Yeah, these guys, like I said, they have two sets each of tag team finishers. The other ones being the tornado kick into the dragon suplex from Speedball Mountain. And then you've got the backpack stunner into the big flying elbow from the system. And then, of course, what finishes it off is roster cut, Boston Knee Party. That's it. System retains. And I love that that is what does it. Those two together, roster cut, Boston Knee Party, always gets the job done. The others are really good near fall finishes.
And listen, I can't talk from experience on this because I cannot physically execute this maneuver at all. But I'm just going to talk from somebody who has watched mixed martial arts my entire life and watched professional wrestling my entire life. That kick that Speedball did, it was basically like a tornado kick, like you said. But like when he normally does a tornado kick, you know, like it's, someone's in the corner and he goes all the way across the ring and does almost like a trouble in paradise into them, into the corner. The way he's able to manipulate his body, spin, and still hit his target with these kicks, like for that, when he did that into the like the half and half that that Trent did, which it looked incredible. I just wanted to just give some credit there. Like, I know it's kind of like everyone already probably knows that they're seeing something that's pretty cool without me having to say it, but I don't think there's another wrestler on that entire roster or maybe in the entire world who could actually execute that kick as crisp as what Speedball did. And just that one move alone is just so impressive to me, to be able to spin, redirect, hit your target, make it look crisp, make it look really good, make the sound good, everything looks good. And you also don't actually kick your opponent's head off. You know what I mean? So yeah, the Speedball is awesome. And the only downside to him, like people were saying in the chat, is for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's a commitment thing as far as like, his commitment to pro wrestling, but it's like his, like, I don't know how locked in he is like to TNA for how long. And he takes bookings all over the place. Sorry. What's that?
End of this year is his contract. And that was a last conversation. And that's publicly known. I'm not saying anything out of school
here. Well, and that makes it a little more confusing for me then, honestly, because like he does take too many out, like George Scott in the chat said, Scott George in the chat said, he loses way too often on these TNA PLEs. You know, would it make sense for him to be the TNA tag team champion right now, given the storyline with the system and everything? Probably not. But like, they got it. Similar to what I was saying about Jake something, like and Joe Hendry, to even a higher degree, they got to figure something out with Speedball going forward, like throughout the rest of this year, because. Yeah, I just think he's super, super talented and he shouldn't be losing this often. But the match itself, like I said, it was my favorite match of the show, probably this tag team match.
Go check out my interview with Speedball Mike Bailey from January. We spoke after Hard to Kill. It did about 35 minutes, him and I, just sitting in my hotel room, just shooting the you-know-what. And you'll get a good idea of his wrestling philosophy and how he works so hard, why he works so hard, and the way he does it. The one lost moment from TNA that should have happened, the lost opportunity, Speedball and Trinity having some sort of interaction, a tag team, whatever, because they both did those side-by-side kicks and they never got to work on those together.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
And they wanted
totally
to.
Right.
They were both into it, but it just never came together.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Doesn't matter. But what did come together, last man standing. Third match of the trilogy, Josh Alexander defeats Alexander Hammerstone. This match was just fantastic.
Yeah,
these two men beat the living hell out of each other. They did it Hard to Kill. They did a couple months later. I forget if it was Sacrifice or No Surrender. It was No Surrender. Hammerstone ain't coming to Canada, right? Anyway, it doesn't matter. This match was just very good, very aggressive. Alexander gets the win, having beat the crap out of Hammerstone. Leaves him on the floor with a C4 spike. Hammerstone cannot make the 10 counts. This was, talk to me. This was really, really solid stuff.
Yeah, this was awesome. So this was the other match that I would say, the tag team match and this match were my two favorite matches of the show. I thought it was going to be over when Hammerstone hit a Nightmare Pendulum off the second rope into thumbtacks. I was like, how is this not the finish? But then they justified it because Alexander rolled out of the ring to his feet, where it wasn't like he just like no sold it or just like got up after that. But I thought that was a really gnarly spot to, because that takes a, I mean, obviously Hammerstone is a very strong guy, but like I think it's a lot of strength and a lot of trust from Alexander to like, sorry, I'm saying Alexander because I don't want to confuse people. Yeah, I just realized they're both Alexander. So it takes a lot of trust on Josh's end to let Hammerstone do that move to begin with, hold him up like that, and then know he's got to go the completely opposite direction down for the Nightmare Pendulum into thumbtacks and hope that like those thumbtacks don't all get into like the back of your head and stuff at the same time. But I thought that was a great spot. They had a lot of great spots outside the ring. They were fighting for position on the end, on the entrance ramp towards the end of the match. And like you were saying, it all eventually led to, because Hammerstone looked like he was going to try to do another Nightmare Pendulum, but on the entrance ramp, and Alexander wound up hitting with the C4 spike on the entrance ramp. The thing that kind of did Hammerstone in was giving Alexander that extra time when he went and he got the headgear. And I saw your tweet about this, and I thought the same exact thing. Obviously, you'd imagine this guy could afford another set of headgear. It is not expensive. But
the man got a cut behind the ear. He has to know. Yeah,
right, right.
And like so, I had people in my replies being like, oh, he doesn't know what kayfabe is. I tagged his wife.
Right, yes.
We follow each other on Twitter. We have like, I was like, guys, it's a joke. We all get it here.
Right, of course. So, you know, but that played into the end of the match, like how Hammerstone kind of had him. And then he was like, I'm going to go get the headgear and put it on my arm and like really salt in the wound. And so, yeah, the actual match I thought was badass. It's good to see Josh Alexander get the win. He's a guy who should be in the upper main event scene and constantly be a threat for the heavyweight championship. And Hammerstone, I'm very happy for him because he was in MLW for so long. And like, I don't have a problem with MLW personally. I cover MLW for the Weekender. I think they have a lot of great talent and their shows are really good. Like their PLEs they've been doing recently for live on Triller TV, I think have been like really good shows consistently. But it was one of those things where he ran his course in MLW. He was there a really long time. He was the open weight champion, and then he was the world champion for a long time. And then at one point they just like made him Hulk Hogan for a while, which was weird. But now it's like the big question mark was he's been in the system for so long and he really wasn't doing much on like the indies. He would pop up occasionally some places, but he wasn't like an indie guy. So there's a lot of question marks about like, okay, he's leaving MLW. And that was also, to not go too deep into that, I thought that was situation was interesting, but actually played out really well for both sides. He basically made it known he wanted out of MLW. MLW didn't want to just like let him out of his contract because he was under contract, and that makes sense. So they amicably agreed on like getting him in that WTF stable. He finished his contract out. Everyone wound up, you know, it was a good example of like both sides coming to an agreement, figuring things out, getting through it, and then moving on. I like seeing that. We need to see more of that in wrestling without these giant blow-ups and bridges being burned. But anyways, those were question marks because we didn't really know what it was going to look like for him outside of MLW. He, I think, opened a lot of eyes in his first match with Alexander. And then overall, this trilogy, I think, has made him look really, really good. And coming out of this, like, honestly, I thought that Hammerstone was going to win this feud mainly because I thought that he was going to be one of the next guys up for a world title shot. But I have no problem with Josh Alexander being in that position because, like I mentioned before, he's always going to be a top-level guy. Or at least he's always should be a top-level guy in that company, in my opinion. So, yeah, I liked everything about this. I like both guys a lot. And really, it's just going to be on TNA to figure out, you know, what to do with Hammerstone coming off the loss. But I mean, considering it was Alexander, it was a rubber match. They're 2-1 against each other. All you got to do is have Hammerstone beat a couple high-ranked dudes in TNA, and he'll be fine, you know, going forward there. So, good stuff.
Another guy that's been repackaged and brought in and redone is Jonathan Gresham. This is the only promo that I want to talk about tonight from backstage, and that's because, well, it's not a backstage promo. It's a pre-tape. They've been running these vignettes throughout Impact for the last few weeks. This was the final chapter. The build on Gresham is that he is now more octopus than man. I say that kind of half jokingly, but he spits up ink and then he's doing a duality of man thing, which is normally a little cheesy, but for him, this is going to sound so weird, but the best thing they did was recreate the octopus mask and get rid of the tentacles. And now there's a face there. It's almost a lucha mask now. And I'm really interested in Jonathan Gresham in a way that I haven't been in a while, especially for a time when I was wondering if Jonathan Gresham is even still in TNA. He did recently re-sign with the company. This is what we're building to. What did you think of this and the new Jonathan Gresham look?
Y'all like Animorphs? dude, this is sick. I actually like this a lot. Do you think he's going to wrestle in that mask?
That's the thing. I would like to see it.
Me too.
It looks like the Drago mask from Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't hate to see him wrestle in that mask, but I don't know if that's really the Gresham mentality. Like, I don't know. Maybe if they turn it into like a Finn Balor demon just to make things, you know, tangible for those who don't watch TNA, but maybe watch WWE, someone who wrestles without the mask frequently, and then when he has to turn it up to a new level, he becomes the octopus, and the octopus wrestles in that mask.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot of possibilities with this. And I thought that the actual video was done really, really well. It clearly established what was going on, that he has become half man, half octopus. And it's honestly something, I mean, this is a welcome kind of like upgrade or change to Gresham just overall as like a character and stuff, like, because the main thing with him has always been fantastic technical wrestler, undersized, but doesn't matter because of what he can do in the ring. On the indie scene right now, like, he's building a feud with Cruel, and I mean, he's basically up to Cruel's waist. I mean, the size difference is honestly hilarious, but it's going to be great because, you know, Jonathan Gresham is so damn good in the ring that, like, it doesn't matter who, what his size or the opponent size is, like, it's going to be good. But that's always been kind of the thing for Gresham. Really great in the ring, undersized, but it doesn't matter because of how great he is. But that there wasn't really more to him than that, if that makes sense. It's just like you saw him and you expected a good match. This adds layers to him as a character and stuff that I think you can actually do some interesting stuff with, and I'd imagine they'll incorporate the ink into his match somehow, like he'll use it like as like a weapon and stuff like that. Like and the thing I like the most about Jonathan Gresham is that he doesn't have like a real, I mean, he has like some submission holds he uses more than others, like Zack Sabre Jr. does the same thing too, but like I like that he has so many different ways he'll beat you in different matches, and the octopus thing is just so perfect for that, with the limbs and the you know, the stuff you can do with that. So I really, really like this, and I think it's gonna add a lot to Jonathan Gresham's presentation, and maybe he'll get a really good push in TNA going forward.
Run back Gresham and Santana.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good idea.
Let's talk about the Knockouts World title match. This match was not for me. Jordynne Grace defeats Steph DeLander. Matt Cardona was injured this past week. We wish him well. We hope for the best. So he wasn't there tonight in Las Vegas to second Steph. Instead, this was just a giant overbooked mess. We had George Iceman, the personal concierge for by Elegance, introduces her, puts her in the box, and then of course the match just happens. Jordynne Grace's gear is fantastic. Steph DeLander knocks out the referee. The good hands can't wake up Frank Gastineau, the referee, in time. So they take off a shirt. They go for the count. Lights out. Everyone holds their breath collectively. It's PCO. He takes out the good hands. Steph DeLander tries to seduce PCO. Very funny. And then PCO goes to chokeslam her. It takes forever because Khan takes forever to get to the ring. He breaks it up, takes out PCO. Grace, for some reason, goes after Khan because I don't think she saw that how this all went down. And then Khan pie faces Jordynne Grace. I'm just running through the notes here. Grace low blows him, tries for a juggernaut driver before the good hands get involved again. They do it all again, and then out the lights again. And after collective sigh, Sami Callihan is back in TNA. Jordynne Grace retains the match. This match was not for me, like I said, but Sami Callihan is back, so we got that going for us. Thoughts on the Death Machine, thoughts on the match. Let's break it down real quick.
Yeah, not great. I love Jordan Grace. I can't put her over enough. Like, she's like one of my favorites. I've talked about it 1,000 times. So I think she should be way beyond nothing against the Knockouts title. I've said it 1,000 times, but like, she should be in a company like TNA where they're willing to do intergender wrestling. She should be like in the world title mix. I think the world of Jordan Grace. This match was not very good. I thought it was funny though, how, and it wasn't supposed to be, this is bad. So first way this was weird was, okay, like you mentioned, which was it? I can't remember if it was Hotch or Skyler who grabbed the referee shirt and put it on, but they go for the count. 1, 2, get all the way down for the 3. Like, they went down and then and then the light went out. And then when they turned the light back on, the arms up being held by PCO. And then the next time they tried something like that, they're like, oh no, he's gonna snap their neck. And then like, he does it before the lights cut out. So it's like, you see it happen. Like, it didn't save them on time, but now we have to pretend like you did, because like, you didn't turn the lights out fast enough and you can't just like stand there and not do anything. So they double botched the lights out somehow in one match. Yeah, it was overbooked. It wasn't very good. Juggernaut Driver for the win. Sweet finisher, you know. Like I said, Jordan Grace is great. And listen, I nothing against Steph DeLander. You know, I see her all the time at GCW. I mean, like, I'm, you know, very aware of, and I think that her and Cardona has been a really, really good pairing. It's unfortunate that Cardona is injured, obviously. Like, I'm not happy about that at all. I'm a huge fan of his. But yeah, just it wasn't very good. And then, yeah, Callahan coming back, as you mentioned. I mean, I basically take what I said about Eddie Edwards and just copy and paste it. And that's, you know, it's like, what is left to do with this man in TNA? But, you know, I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. He's going to have a feud that I don't care about for the next few months. He's going to have a pay-per-view match that I don't care about at all, but it's going to wind up delivering.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. And it'll be a hardcore match of some kind. It'll be, you know, there'll be tag. In a couple months when we're talking about this, people can go back and listen to me saying it right now. I'm going to go into it and I'm going to say, yeah, I didn't really care that much about this match going into it, but it was really good. And it was a pretty good hardcore match.
We got a super chat earlier from Alan Kahn saying Grace versus SDL, slightly overbooked.
Slightly, yes, a little bit.
I was looking for the video. I know it's somewhere in my memes folder. I've posted it once or twice. No one's going to remember this. WCW 2000, which has a very soft spot in my heart. I love it. There's just lights on, lights off. And it's, I think Shane Douglas has Asia, or no, has Midnight in a chicken wing, and then the lights go out, and the lights go on, and someone's in the ring, and then the lights go out again, and the lights go on, and the commentary team the whole time, like Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan, are just like making jokes. Did we not pay the electrical bill? Who's in charge of this place? And every time they did it tonight, I just went back to that video, and it's just not good. So please, don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna attempt that stuff, like, just in their mind, they were envisioning like WrestleMania Night 2, like with the run-ins and like the Undertaker, the lights off, like, and then like it just didn't come out. I reference It's Always Sunny all the time, and a lot of people don't watch the show, but if you do, and you'll know what I'm talking about. There's a High School Musical episode where they do this whole song and dance at the end of the episode to oh, what's his name? George Michael, Freedom. Oh, what's the name of that song?
Freedom.
Oh, I can't remember. Anyway,
Freedom 95.
Freedom 90. Yes, Freedom 90 something.
96. Yeah.
They do that song, and in their own minds, like, they're killing it. But then you see the perspective of everyone else, and like, it's terrible. You know, like, and it's, and that's kind of what I feel like we saw tonight.
Oh God, heading down the home stretch, folks, get your super chats in, get your Humper chats in at humperchats.com. And by the way, thank you for Kylie becoming a YouTube member here. There's tons of content there. And of course on FightfulSelect.com, best $5 in the business. We were talking about TNA over in our Discord, where you get access to that with Fightful Select. And of course you get to listen to the Weekender podcast with Steven Jensen, who gets to talk to you about a plethora of wrestling, the stuff that you might not know is happening. Steven Jensen's the one telling you all about it. So I don't know if you have anything else to add about that.
Yeah, like this week. So normally I do the show on Sundays, but depending on what's going on, like tomorrow, for instance, obviously AEW Dynasty is going to have a lot of stuff going on in people's mind. But on top of that, GCW is running a show that'll be tomorrow night. Pawcade is tomorrow. Sean Ross Sapp will be involved in that. And if you want to check out the interview of myself and Jeremy Lambert just did with Cole Radrick, he'll be on there. There was a run-in from Steve, not Dr. Death. The two of them had some banter on our show. So if you want to get hyped up for Pawcade, that'll be tomorrow. Like there was AIW tonight. There was ICW NHB last night and tonight. So like there's plenty of stuff that I'll be covering on Monday, but that's just to give you a little taste of kind of the stuff that I'm normally talking about. If there's MLW stuff, I'll talk about it. I cover NXT Level Up. So yeah, like Joel said, I cover your NWA most of the time, unless it's just like, you know, not worth it. But sure. Anyway, you know, so anyway. That's, yeah, check out the Weekender if you want your fix of like indies and kind of like the lesser covered stuff. So
plus the scoops, plus Sour Graps, plus list goes on, plus all the stuff. Tons of content, $5 a month, best in the business. We really do mean it when we say it. If you haven't yet, go subscribe, FightfulSelect.com. Slammiversary is July 20th at the Verdun in Montreal. Taping's the next night. I might go. I'm gonna ask Speedball if I can crash on the floor. Isn't nice. He doesn't live in Montreal anymore. Who am I kidding? So,
is he still in Canada or does he live in the States now?
I'll tell you off the air. Main event time, world title match. Nick Nemeth defeats. No, he doesn't. Nick Nemeth. Why do I have Nick Nemeth defeats Moose?
Where are you looking that from?
My own notes. You know, because you know what? I honest to God, I wrote every match. Like, I wrote everything right up until this match. If I was doing predictions, I got everything right. Except for this one. This match, I was so certain Nick Nemeth was going to win and either option C was going to get cashed in or some dusty finish was going to happen. But instead, no. Moose eventually wins clean over Nick Nemeth. Nick's got a new dye job. His dad and his brother are at ringside. For those of you who don't know, Nick Nemeth's brother is Hot Young Briley and his dad is Hot Old Briley. If you know, you know. Sorry, Ryan Nemeth, AEW and Daddy Don. Anyway, system get tossed from ringside early. Nick Nemeth is just kind of waving bye-bye, which was very funny. The match was fine. This match was a TNA main event. It was totally it was not painful. It made perfect sense. Moose gets a clean win, but the post-match is what really matters. Broken Matt Hardy is back. And by the way, he's already updated. He said he's still a free agent. He did not sign a contract. He's like, presumably on PPA, but we are going to find out and report it on Fightful Select once we know for sure. What do you think of the match? And let's talk a little bit about Matt Hardy before we get home.
Sure. So I thought the match was solid. I don't want to say the finish came out of nowhere, but I was a little, I'll say I agree with you. And I, on my predictions on the Weekender, I said the same thing. I thought that Nick Nemeth was going to win this match as well. So when Moose won essentially clean, I was like, oh, damn, didn't expect that. And he didn't finish his story. Like, his family's right there in the front row. So that was, you know, it is what it is, I guess. Like, I was kind of surprised. I also figured, and this, I said this in my predictions as well, the reason that I had predicted Kazarian to beat Eric Young and also predicted Hammerstone to beat Josh Alexander was because I thought those two guys could be title challengers to Nick Nemeth because they're both heels, Nemeth being a baby face. But I was wrong about all that, you know. Moose retained. Because also part of my line of thinking, to be honest, was I didn't know, like, I don't know when TNA found out that Alex Shelley wasn't going to be sticking around. So, like, part of my line of thinking was like, well, they took it off him with Moose because he was like the right guy, most credible, kind of like the best person at the time to do that when they needed to get the belt off of him and then wrap everything up with MCMG and everything to where we're at now. So I felt like, okay, well, Moose will, you know, just lose it to Nemeth here. And, you know, that way he's kind of a transitional champion, but he was the right guy to win the title at the time if you needed to take the title off of Shelley. But no, I mean, it looks like he's going to have an actual run with this thing. And they have titles on the entire system group outside of Alicia, but they're working on that with Masha. So, I mean, good for Moose. He's always been a solid performer for them. I think they kind of missed the boat with him around the pandemic. I think he could have been pushed like stronger as like a really established kind of face of their company going forward. But, you know, maybe that's kind of what they're doing with them now. But I also think it's kind of interesting that, well, that all said, like Moose wins the match. I thought the match was solid for what it was. And I'm interested to see what they do with Nemeth next. But then we got the setup immediately for Matt Hardy versus Moose. If you missed the top of the show, we had John Alba on with us earlier, who obviously very connected to Matt Hardy. He talked about, we gave a lot of thoughts about this already at the top of the show. So you can go back and listen to some of that if you missed it. But I think that Hardy versus Moose will be a good match when it eventually happens. But I highly doubt that Matt Hardy's going to be the one to beat Moose, especially if he's not going to be, you know, on contract. But there's maybe some crazy stuff they can kind of do with like the Hardy broken universe and everything and the system and Moose and stuff. Like, it could be interesting. And I'm happy for Matt Hardy. Got a good pop. And he really reinvented himself in TNA all those years ago in Impact/TNA. Like, the whole broken Hardy thing was born in that company, that, and like he carried it over to Ring of Honor and essentially invented the cinematic match and, you know, that whole cinematic universe. I don't know how old his kids are nowadays, but like might be old enough to be a little more involved in some of the stuff. You know, I remember Maxwell being a very, very small child, but like kind of like almost kind of knowing what was going on a little bit, you know? But yeah, so I'm interested to see what they wind up doing with that. I'm also interested, just like everyone else, to know the status of Jeff Hardy, to know what the possibilities of the Hardy Boys outside of AEW could potentially be. So and that's a whole other conversation in itself, whether or not you feel like AEW has completely fumbled having the Hardy Boys when they did. I get it on both sides, you know. I think there was a lot of plans for those guys, and then Jeff wasn't available, you know, and stuff, and plans wound up changing, but they're still the Hardy Boys. There's still a lot of money you could probably make with those guys. I agree with John that we talked about at the top of the show. If the Hardys showed up in WWE right now, like on like pay-per-view, they came out right now as a surprise for a tag team match similar to WrestleMania 33, they'd get a massive return pop in the WWE. And Jeff Hardy will always be considered a like WWE championship level guy in the WWE system. Like, people will always consider him to be a main eventer in that company, no matter how old he gets. So anyway, that all said, good for Matt Hardy. I'm glad he's in the position he's in to kind of reinvent himself, get some more buzz, maybe go back to AEW, continue to be a part of AEW, maybe do something else, maybe pop up in WWE, whatever he winds up doing. I'd imagine he'll wrestle Moose, but I imagine that Moose will eventually retain when they wrestle each other.
By the way, we will have an update on Jeff Hardy and his contract status on VipalSelect.com tomorrow. So if you haven't already, subscribe to FightfulSelect.com, would you? Okay, that's my last plug for that. They're taping at the Palms tomorrow, announced already. Nick Nemeth, Eddie Edwards, Miyu Yamashita is taking on Jordan Grace. That's going to be a hell of a match. Chris Bay versus Mustafa Ali. Zaya Brookstein versus Ash.
Wait, hold on. Did you say Rina Yamashita?
Miyu Yamashita.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nina. It's not a hardcore match. It's Miyu.
Ultra violent. Come on, man.
It's not going to be that. You cut off the Ash by Elegance Park, but I don't want to do the gimmick again. Speedball takes on Brian Myers. Zachary Wentz takes on Leon Slater. And Bun B's going to be there. Rapper Bun B. We reported that over on FightfulSelect.com that he would be there. So go check that out. That's going to be the tapings in Vegas tomorrow night. Between now and anniversary in July, there are two TNA Plus events. One is Under Siege in Albany, New York, and the other one's going to be at Against All Odds. That's in Chicago, Cicero Stadium. That's a big event for them and a big room for them to work. That could be the Matt Hardy match or matches. So there is room between now and Slammiversary to work the Matt Hardy story in. Again, he has reported that he is still a free agent, presumably pay for appearance, but we'll find out more and we'll report it as we get it over on FightfulSelect.com. Said it was my last plug, but I lied. But I'm out of time. I'm out of gas. I'm done. Is there anything else you want to add before we get on out of here? Again, inoffensive main event. Moose retains. But really, the lines of the night were just the big returns. Santana, Sami Callihan, Matt Hardy.
Yep. Overall, solid pay-per-view. PLE, whatever you want to call it. I always look forward to doing these four times a year for TNA. That was really, it was a solid show. And I'm interested to see where the whole company goes going forward with the talent that they've got. The yeah, I'll just plug real quick. My X is fighttalk_. You can use code fighttalk on independentwrestling.tv. Go check out the Fightful Select Weekender podcast. Speaking of Steph DeLander, her man's Mance Warner is coming out in GCW right now. If you want to watch some GCW after this. But Mance Warner, I think, will be the next GCW world champion, or be the champion pretty soon. But anyways, I'm looking forward to watching more wrestling, and I will talk about it on Monday. Like I said, Fightful Select Weekender podcast. And the last plug that I'll give has nothing to do with wrestling. Just a little bit of a thing that I think about every now and then when I watch these shows. Palms Casino is where this show took place. The Palms Casino. If I am not a fan of reality television, I do not watch reality television. I've not watched it in a very, very long time. But back in the day, my favorite season of reality TV ever was out of that Palms Casino, Real World Las Vegas. If you guys ever want to go check that out, back in 2002, probably the best season of reality television you can ever watch. So that reminded me of that tonight when I was watching the show out of the Palms. If you want to watch something not wrestling related, go check out Real World Las Vegas from that same casino.
I stayed at Palms Place last time I was in Vegas for TNA. So there you go. I liked it better. I just liked it better. It was just a more sweet slice. And it doesn't matter. Vegas is Vegas. Until then, I am at Troll Pearl, J-O-E-F-P-A-R-L. I'm back on In the Weeds starting on Monday with Jeremy Lambert over on our sister channel, Fightful Overbooked. So go check that out. And Cresta and I will be back regularly again on Thursdays after TNA Impact. Talk about the show. Break it all down. Under Siege is in 2 weeks, so God bless. We'll be back on to do that as well, Cresta and I will, because it never stops. That's the grind. Until then, ladies, gentlemen, friends beyond the binary, we'll see you in the next one. Cheers.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.